One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Come get some. Beware,
IGN GameScoop.
All right, here we go. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hadfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Jared Petty.
Scoop.
Brian Altano.
Rap.
So you're more distinguished.
Yeah, I'm trying to mature.
These days.
Just get old.
A single brap.
We got a great show for this week. First of all, a little housekeeping. I know a lot of people listen to this show. A lot of people watch this show on IGN, YouTube. As a quick reminder, another place you can watch this show is on our apps, on our PS4, the IGN PS4 app and the IGN Xbox One app. That's a really nice way to watch the show. On your couch, Game Scoop and chill is what the kids say.
Yeah,
ooh, yeah, definitely.
These days.
We're on the couch, they're on the couch.
Yeah.
I think are we also on Roku?
Yep, what? I think Roku and Apple TV.
People still running those?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, there's this term that people use in the San Francisco Bay Area called dog fooding. Ooh. You guys aware of this?
No,
what is this?
And it's if you work for a startup or work for a company that's making some product that you're supposed to use, like if you work for, you know, Google, you should only use Google products. Don't use, you know, Microsoft Excel, so you can really get a feel for, like if you're not using your own product, then maybe your product's not up to snuff. And I'll tell you, the IGN PS4 app, even if I didn't work here or whatever, like
you'd
it's
still use it, yeah.
Totally rad. But
that's a very cool way
you
to watch
play
it.
And you lean back and everything's just
so
right
is
there.
That like you should eat your dog's food before your dog eats it, so you know what's good dog food?
Where I think it's just the phrase is like drinking the Kool-Aid, like eating the dog food is like a similar, I don't know, maybe I'm making that up. I don't know where the phrase comes from.
Yeah.
You know what it means, but you don't know why it means
right.
that.
Because I understood everything you said except for that part. I would much rather have Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Than dog food.
So yeah. I totally do the like the IGN PS4 app's great. If people haven't downloaded it, they should.
Quick eat reminder. The dog food.
Dog fooding just sounds dirty.
Eat it.
All right, this week we're going to talk about a little more about Mass Effect Andromeda. We're going to talk about bad games we spent way too much time on.
Ooh. Oh, goodness gracious.
But first of all, Fable Legends is a video game that's not coming out anymore.
What was that?
Let's just move past it. There was a weird thing floating by me.
Mr. Miyagi did.
Yeah, you legally have to make a wish.
Did you see it?
I thought you were reaching up and pulling down a star. I didn't know what was going on.
All right.
Anyway, Fable Legends.
Yeah.
Canceled. Yeah. The developer, Lionhead, also probably canceled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very sad. We have an email from Mike in Syracuse. Now, Fable used to be a top-tier like Xbox franchise.
Totally.
Yeah, for sure.
People really liked Fable 1, people really, really liked Fable 2.
Yep.
Still kind of like Fable 3, but we never got that Fable 4. We've gotten these, like, what was the Kinect one? Fable The Journey?
Geez.
Yes.
Oh, forgot about that.
And then Fable Legends was going to be a free-to-play cooperative RPG. So we never really got the next Fable game that people wanted. But Mike in Syracuse writes us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like you can. Says, with the recent announcement from Microsoft that Fable Legends has been canceled and Lionhead will be closed, I was wondering what other tentpole franchises
first party or otherwise, like Ooh. Fable, have been mismanaged to the point of bringing down the development Ooh. Studio.
Oh my goodness.
Are there many, and I'm just not thinking of them, or is this a rarity?
I mean, it almost happened with Mortal Kombat. And it's a famous example of a franchise coming back from the brink. Like, it got very, very bad, you know, critically panned, not very commercially successful. And then NetherRealm sort of took over the rights to it with Ed Boon, and they sort of nursed the franchise back to health. And now it's bigger than ever.
Yeah. The first thing that popped into my head are all the Konami franchises that have just sort of wilted on the vine. Yeah, there was never like this apocalyptic explosion, but you think about things like Silent Hill or...
Yeah, we were talking about Silent Hill before.
Suikoden.
Yeah, Suikoden or even Metal Gear, for that matter. Right. I mean, we're not sure that Metal Gear games are gone, but Kojima's, you know, involvement in his own franchise is just kind of spectacularly just, you know, grease-fired there at the end.
Same goes with Castlevania.
Yeah. The interesting thing about Konami is that a lot of people don't realize that Konami is this huge company, and then this video games, as we think of them, are this little thing over here.
Yeah.
And they also have this giant pachinko business.
And they're like real estate.
Yeah, they're a huge, huge company outside of video games. And when they see Metal Gear Solid 5 was a massive success, but also hugely expensive, they're kind of like, why are we doing this? Why are we in this business?
So, and I think that's what happened with this Fable game, is that somebody high up came in and said, this has been in development for, you know, 4 years, almost 5 years, and there's no way we could possibly make that money back.
Yeah.
And Justin, you and I were talking. Yeah, especially there. But you and I were talking about the Last Guardian the other day. Yeah. We were having a meeting about it, because that's what we do at our jobs. We have a meeting about the Last Guardian. And we talked about how there's pretty much no way that that company can make that money back at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it just can't happen. So you're ultimately launching a game at a loss, and I guess at that point you're just doing it for...
Well, you're trying to cut your losses at that point.
Yeah,
let's say, you know, if you don't think you're going to be able to make your money back, it's still better to lose
something.
Lose a little money instead of a lot of money.
Well, but that's a really dangerous way to think about it. There's this, term in business called the sunk cost fallacy, which is we've already put in $10 million, so we might as well just put in, you know, another five or eight to get it out the door and get it to the point, you know, where we can recoup some of that cost. But you need to forget about what you've spent before. Like, you need to be thinking about what you're going to continue to put in. And that's what someone at Microsoft did, and eventually just said, nah, we can't justify putting in, you know, the additional time. And
that same ideology applies to time as well.
Yeah.
For people, I mean, if you're in college and some dead-end major, and you're just like, oh, I've been here for 3 years, I might as well finish strong.
Totally,
well, maybe
you
shouldn't, you know?
It's also because that's what people don't think about is... not only are you spending that money, but it's what are you not spending it on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, whatever money they were going to take to finish Fable Legends, they can presumably spend on something else rad now instead, you know, that they think has more potential.
And then there's the powerful tax incentive of being able to write certain things off as a loss and say, you know what? Well, we'll lose less just by saying, whoops, we put something into this, we never got anything out of it.
Yeah.
That's all business expense we can just write off.
Yeah, it is a bummer. There's dog fooding.
There's dog fooding. I've seen a lot of people being really critical of Microsoft, and I get it. Like, I loved Lionhead, and I actually thought this Fable, when people played it, it was kind of shaky, but I thought it was like a cool idea. And they've canceled, they sort of are developing this reputation for canceling projects now that people are really pumped about.
Phantom Dust.
I think that's completely valid. Like, I wanted Phantom Dust 2, I want another Fable. But the flip side is, like, I don't know, they canceled it because it wasn't good, right? Mm-hmm. Like, things don't get canceled that are awesome. Like, it just doesn't happen.
Very rarely.
Unless there's, like, extenuating circumstances. So it's like, that's the flip side of, like, I kind of see it as good news. Like, hey, they're stopping us from spending a bunch of time and money and energy on this thing that they didn't believe in.
So. I think it's like when you take this studio and you couple it with sort of Rare's squandered potential, you look at the Xbox and you go, well, okay, so this thing is doing like shooters really well, and it's got great third-party stuff, and it's got a lot of good first-party stuff too. But in terms of that sort of like kind of more like mythical fantasy adventure type stuff, a lot of that's kind of been pushed aside. And even like we saw that shot of the newly redesigned Conker used in that demo.
It's young Conker, right?
Yeah, which is weird because it implies that at some point, and it's probably when his alcoholism started, his body completely changed shape.
But from a purely sympathetic perspective, I do feel bad for the people who are working there.
Because,
it's a hard enough industry to make a living in anyway. A lot of these are very talented, hardworking human beings that put years of their lives into something. And now some of them may end up having to look for jobs.
Well, it's like the Death Star shooting down Alderaan. You know, like there is a world here that just now no longer exists.
Alderaan was canceled.
It was canceled. That's a very nice way of putting it. But like these people for 4 years were working on, were designing trees and steps and walls and characters and scripts and voices and like a narrative, and they were calling up their loved ones and being like, I gotta work late tonight because I'm designing this awesome rock. Like they were building a world, and then it just goes away. It just disappears. Like we'll never get to see, I mean, maybe 20 years from now, somebody will leak some zip file that has a whole bunch of things on it.
You wonder about these lost projects. I was just reading a thing about Gears 4 and working on, you know, and everything we know for that. And the Coalition, before they were the Coalition, when they were Black Tusk, they were working on a game. They'd been working on it for a long time, and that intellectual property we will likely never see nor know what it is. Yep. 2 years of their lives before they switched over to Gears, they were working on something else, and everybody there, in order to get Gears, had to be willing to say, well, the last 2 years of hard work and overtime, sorry. And for them, it was probably a good call business-wise, but still,
and that's actually, it's an interesting scenario there, because we're probably working on proof of concepts that made it into their next project, mm-hmm. but with this, like, you're not promised tomorrow, you know? We don't know what's happening. I remember when we first saw Resident Evil 4, right, and, like, Leon's fighting ghosts in a spooky mansion, and, like, they pulled all that stuff out. There was also that new Star Fox game that's starring Slippy and his uncle.
Grippy.
Started as a tech demo that was at E3 2 years ago that was about like security cameras and stuff like that. So all that stuff, like Nintendo has a pretty good way of taking their proof of concepts and folding them into games.
Yeah.
But something like this is just
gone. It's super weird. It's unusual. The unusual thing about Fable Legends is by all accounts that game was very far along. Like it's not like it was some early project that just wasn't coming together the way they wanted. Like people have been playing what seemed like near final versions of this for a long time. What I suspect, it's all speculation, but just it almost has to have happened this way, where they had some milestone meeting and they're like, holy crap, guys, like we need way more time than we expected to finish this up. It's not coming together the way that we wanted. Mm-hmm. And so like that must have been what happened, and finally someone just pulled the plug. Mm-hmm. But it's very unusual for something to be that far along and then not you know, make its way to completion.
Didn't that happen with Dead Island 2?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so that what happened there?
They officially canceled it, but they said we're stopping development for now.
Their publisher pulled out of funding
because a new developer.
I like what Brian said about Nintendo. They'll find ways to fold things in. If you look at that leaked version of Star Fox 2, a lot of the stuff that ended up in Star Fox Command, you know, 15 years later or 10 years later, probably, is drawn out of that old game. So sometimes this stuff does bubble back up if the organization survives. Sadly, if Lionhead goes away,
bubble back up.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it always it sort of begs the question of like, is it better to just put out a game that almost destroys a franchise or just cancel it entirely? Like, look at something like, I mean, completely different genre, but you look at the Fantastic Four movie, which was like clearly the one from last year, which was clearly like cobbled together at the last minute using parts and reshoots and people switching kind of roles and designs midstream. And by the end, like, the 90% of the movie is just build up to something that happens in 4 minutes and then just ends and there's a cliffhanger and you're like, what? And that probably killed that franchise for 5-10 years, maybe. If we don't know when we'll see it again. So
maybe that's what Microsoft's thinking is we'll see Fable 5 will be at E3 in 2 years, and it'll be another third person action RPG, and everybody will be so hyped.
You mentioned Rare a little bit ago. Although that studio is still around, I think a franchise that has been mismanaged was Perfect Dark.
Isn't that weird?
Started out so strongly and then. There was Perfect Dark Zero, which was pretty weak, and then that was it.
You look at GoldenEye and Perfect Dark as the definitive console shooters of their time, and moving over those properties, or at least the Perfect Dark property, to the Xbox, which was seen as the Xbox 360, which was seen as the new home for shooters. And like, what happened? We got Perfect Dark Zero, which has not aged very well, and was never really that great. And then that's it, and nothing. Yeah. You know, it's very odd.
I mean, the Activision is a company famous for this by annualizing Tony Hawk, but the thing is, it didn't usually blow up the developers, although Neversoft, kind of blew up. Rock Band, Guitar Hero, just releasing things every single year and grinding them into the ground. Mm-hmm. It's not happened with Skylanders yet, but like I think I remember reading that the new one didn't sell quite as well as the last one for the first time, so it's like maybe it reached its peak. So.
Yeah, and that's an interesting game too, because I feel like that's the kind of game that the target audience will grow out of and a new target audience will grow into. I mean,
well, they have a lot more fierce competition with like Nintendo and other people now.
Sure,
so we'll see.
You guys remember Ensemble Studios?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Age of Empires.
Right.
They made Age of Empires games for 10 years, and then Microsoft put them on Halo Wars. And then immediately after Halo Wars was out, Microsoft shut down Ensemble.
Yeah, just gone.
Very sad.
Yeah, I don't think they mismanaged anything there. I think Halo Wars is a good game, and we're even getting a sequel, but that's a strange scenario.
Yeah, it does. It sounds like we're building this like kind of massive anti-Microsoft narrative here. I think a lot of these are sort of coincidental, but maybe.
Yeah, I mean.
Maybe.
Well.
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, it's different leadership, you know, from 10 years ago to today.
Sure.
And you remember Silicon Knights?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great example.
The game that did it to them, I think, was X-Men Destiny.
Yeah.
Ooh. Do you remember that one?
That and Two Human being the 1-2 punches of games.
Yeah, so Two Human came out
and
was just not great.
It was not great.
But there
great.
Was supposed to be a sequel for that one, but they made X-Men Destiny for Activision, I think.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was such a disaster of a game and got terrible, terrible reviews, and that was their last
one. Two Human's actually a good one to bring up going with what we were saying before, because that's a game that was in development since the Nintendo 64,
yeah.
And they're probably like, we have all these great old ideas, and by the time they brought them out, they didn't, you know, and it just didn't work out. So yeah, that was tough to watch, and I think the Canadian government had to get involved, and like there were massive layoffs and studio departures, and
yeah, that was a big deal.
Yeah,
something like Kingdoms of Amalur never even had a chance to become a franchise.
Right?
Yeah, goodness.
Yeah, that was a
Kurt Schilling's thing, right?
Yeah, that was a fascinating story. Finally, LucasArts.
Oh, good one.
Ooh,
was just, you know, they were back in the heyday of point and click adventures, and then. Mm-hmm.
They just kept making great stuff, and
they were not making great stuff.
Yeah.
Remember when they made that game Fracture?
Well,
that was a LucasArts game.
Yep.
Well, they made Fracture, but they also made Grim Fandango. There, you know.
I mean, sure.
So you
mean,
gotta,
but it'd been
yeah, you're right though. It'd been yeah.
I'm fairly sure that probably once a year for the next 10 years, we're going to hear about another one of their canceled Star Wars projects, like something that was 25%, 50% done, or like just a design doc that just never came to life.
Yeah.
That was a hard loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have another email on Fable from Doug. Doug says, with news that Fable Legends has been canceled and developer Lionhead shut down, does that mean hope for a full-fledged Fable sequel is gone? I was really excited to play a Fable game on this console generation.
Yeah, I hope
mean,
so.
Nothing has been announced.
I hope there's still hope. Either way, Fable 2 is so good.
Yeah. I think there's absolutely hope. The brand still has plenty of panache. People remember Fable 2 really fondly. Even Fable 3, people tend to be apologists for, because there was a lot to like in that game. It was short, and there were some strange design decisions, but it was also very creative. I think that it makes sense. The IP still got lots of value, and as long as they don't screw up the next one, they're going to be fine.
You know what I want? I want another Fable Pub Games.
Oh yeah. Was that an XBLA game?
Well, it started, so they did an interesting thing where they released Fable Pub Games as an XBLA game before Fable 2 came out. Then when Fable 2 came out, it was just a part of Fable 2. Like, there were these games you could play in the pub. And I spent as much time with that as I probably did with Fable 2 itself. They were really good.
I think whatever legacy this franchise has, the chance of surviving this generation is more to how long will this generation even go?
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. If there's 3 or 4 years left with these consoles, then maybe.
But the question is, like, who, like, with Lionhead being closed, who would make it?
Who makes it, yeah.
They'll find somebody.
Microsoft Studio,
find someone.
They'll find somebody. 10 guys right there, on the street.
Help wanted.
10
Help
people.
Wanted. Yeah. Make a game.
It's all it takes.
Make a game where you can just fart a lot, and then it makes your wife love you.
But again, going back to the Coalition, they did go and, like, they just grabbed a studio that was working on something else, and like, hey guys, want to make this new, you know, want to make the new Gears game? They might go out there and find somebody to do the same thing.
Well, what they do with this stuff sometimes is they'll reach out to studios and ask them to spend a month or two putting together a pitch.
Yeah.
And if that works, then they give them all the money in the world or whatever they need, and then 4 years later, cancel it or whatever.
Yeah, or not.
We'll or see. Not. Who knows? Fingers crossed.
All right, moving on to Mass Effect Andromeda. This is Pat. He says, I have a question for the panel. I'm a huge BioWare fan. I've waited for years for any scrap or morsel of Mass Effect Andromeda news I can find instead. The only news out of BioWare about the game these days happens to be people leaving the project. I can't help but wonder how many talented departures from one project should a fan take before they get worried about the game itself? Or am I just so anxious for the game I'm getting paranoid?
It's never paranoid to worry about brain drain. I mean, you're looking at, like, oh, people I care about, they've stepped out, and yeah, it makes you nervous. But it's not necessarily reason for panic, but yeah, of course concern's appropriate.
Yeah, I think concern's the perfect way to put it. That's kind of where I've been about Uncharted 4 and Naughty Dog in general. Like, there's no reason to believe that this game won't be phenomenal, but there's just been just enough, like, a couple delays, a couple major people leaving, where I'm just kind of like, huh. I wonder.
Yeah.
If something is a
announced at E3 last summer, virtually nothing revealed since then.
Yes. Yeah.
Delayed from this year into next year. Three key people leave.
Yep.
They even but they even announced EA's. I don't know if it's like deliberate or if they're just trying to get out ahead of leaks. But even before Andromeda was announced, like 3 years before that, BioWare is like, yeah, we're starting to plan the next Mass Effect.
Yep.
Like they were really open and upfront that like they're gonna do more in that world. And it's one of those things I like to think that the reason they did that is because they're like, why fool people? It's the biggest thing we do. Why would we even pretend like we're not making another
one?
Let's just admit it, yeah. And we'll show it to you when it's ready.
Yeah.
In regards to whether, Pat, you should be worried or not, the short answer is kind of we don't know. Like, all the departures might mean something. Like, maybe the project's kind of in trouble or people don't like the direction it's going. Or maybe someone, like, that franchise has been around a decade. Maybe someone just didn't want to work on the fourth one. They want to go work on something new.
Yeah.
Or, like, I don't know. Like, we have people, it's just a big team. And just the sheer numbers, like, IGN's a big team. And I feel like people, I get comments about, like, it seems like people are leaving IGN all the time. I'm like, I guess that's true. But, like, they all still really love it here, and just like, I really wanted to go work at Riot, or I really wanted to go do this. Like, it never really means anything, you know? It's just like people come and go.
It's a lot like a baseball team or something like that, where you look at it and you're like, okay, well, these guys won the championship last year, but then four people left, but then three more people brought on, and then two people left, and five people came on, blah, blah, blah.
Totally.
Well, so the lead writer left last month. Mm-hmm. And I guess that makes sense because, you know, you would think the story would be done well in advance.
The writing work was probably winding down.
But the director left in December.
See, that is more troubling. Like,
When a director leaves a project.
But he was there for a long time, right?
He'd been at BioWare for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a weird scenario. I think I remember that video you were talking about, Justin, where they, was it at E3? A couple years ago where EA was doing all this sort of behind the scenes stuff, and they were saying like, oh, so here's a bunch of computers facing the wrong way where we're going to have people talk about Mass Effect, but we have nothing really to show you. And like, I'm never crazy about that kind of stuff. I'd rather
see it. I kind of respect that. Like, I feel like 343 be like, yeah, we're working on the next Halo. We'll show it to you in 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, I feel like more, it should be that way more often.
Yeah.
Like,
something we should consider is that sometimes departures do take place so a decision can get made. This isn't always why they're made or even usually why they're made, but sometimes there are two parties that have an irreconcilable perspective on a key decision that doesn't keep the game from being made, but somebody may decide to step aside and say, well, it's going to be that way, that's fine, but that's not my thing. That's another thing. That doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to get a quality product. But, I mean, all of us here work in creative collaborations. There are times that you figure out a way to work together on something. There are times like, wow, what a great idea. Yeah, let's implement that. And then there are times that you sit and go, nah, I probably don't need to fool with that anymore. I'll let them handle that, and I'll go do something else.
EA is not going to be on the show floor at E3 this year, but they are having their own public-facing event that runs at the same time. And they are having a press conference on that Sunday before E3. So I fully expect to have the full unveiling of Mass Effect Andromeda.
They rented a small car in the E3 parking lot. Yep. They're just going to let people
show, just peek in there. They have a little monitor.
Yeah, there's a little iPhone. You can watch.
I'm hoping for a big top, elephants, giraffes,
you
jugglers.
Want a circus outside of E3?
Absolutely. Three
rings. Okay. Yep, circus out
absolutely.
I'm totally down with that.
Andromeda is probably my most anticipated game. Definitely a little concerning that the director leaves, you know, in the middle of the project. But, you know, who knows what's going on in their life and why. You can't guess why that's happening.
Yeah.
But that Wild West aspect of it makes me so excited. So I can't wait to learn more.
You mentioned, my phone is ringing. I should not answer it at this time.
I think you should.
Jared, you mentioned Big Top, and that took me on a tangent. What's the over-under on the new Pee Wee Herman movie coming to Netflix being any good?
Oh! Is it a Christmas movie?
It's going to be great.
I don't think so.
It's not holiday-themed, is it?
No.
Okay, because that's
I hope it's good.
Concerning.
So Pee Wee's Big Adventure is good.
Yeah.
Big Top Pee Wee's not very good.
No, it's not very good.
If Paul Reubens has some creative control, I think it's going to depend largely on the writing staff that they bring in and who's actually going to put that together. I think the odds are better that it'll be good than worse.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. All right. I mean, Netflix has released a lot of crap, but every now and then...
they released a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Currently watching House of Cards Season 4.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
It's back to being good again, everybody.
Yeah. All right, next email comes from Tim G. in Queens, New York.
What's up?
He says, a few of us at my job...
Why didn't you say that for the other people?
Because I didn't know where he was from.
Brian's from Queens.
Right, the other guy was probably from somewhere other than New York.
No. He says, a few of us at my job got into a conversation about retro games, and we came up with a fun question I thought I would pass on to you guys. Which bad game did you devote the most time to? For me, it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the NES. I hate this game so much, but I must have put at least 100 hours into it, the first one.
Yep. That's not a bad game.
It's a bad game.
Yeah. Almost 30 years later, and I still haven't beaten it.
Oof. Oh, that game. Yeah, and so, the answer to Justin's question, yes, that's a bad game, and it has mostly to do with level design.
So bad games spent way too much time on. This one was only because it was a pack-in with the game, so like it's all I had to play, but Keith Courage and Alpha Zones was the pack-in game with the TurboGrafx-16, and it's terrible. It's
a bad game.
A totally mediocre platformer.
Yeah, it did have some really pretty color cycling and some nice big characters, but it's not fun to play.
Mm-hmm. That's the game you got with your TurboGrafx-16.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. All the things to showpiece that piece of equipment, why that game? I don't know.
I mean, pretty much anything on the Game Gear was the same way, or a lot of stuff on the Genesis was the same way. I mean, there's a lot of games that we just played back then because they were really expensive, and you would save up and you'd buy something. Like, Echo the Dolphin is a bad game.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Yes, Echo the Dolphin is a terrible video game.
It's not great.
That first stage is good, and after that, just stop playing. Yeah, it's
like when you're a kid, you can't just buy a new game whenever you want. Like, you get it for like Christmas. And then you have to, like, whatever you get for Christmas has to last you for several months until your birthday or whatever.
Unless so you're that one rich kid on the block whose games you borrow if they let you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you be friends with them so you can borrow their games.
I kind of don't even know where to start. They were all pretty much bad.
But what's like, the bad game that you particularly spent a lot of time on?
The Nagano Olympics on the Sega Genesis.
Ooh, that is a bad game. You played that?
I mean, I saw it was the classic thing that a dumb kid does where it was advertised on the back. Like the back of the manual of another game I had, and I'm like, yeah, that looks cool, and I bought it, and I couldn't even understand. Like, you start an event, it's like that, what's that surfing game we were playing the other day?
TNC Surf Design.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
terrible,
you start,
terrible impossible game.
It's not even, impossible. It's literally not unplayable.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can't actually even control. It's just like a bad cartoon happening on your TV that you can't do.
Yeah, you need to practice the game for months before you're any good.
That's what this Olympics game was. You'd start like an event like the downhill skiing, then you'd just go and just fall.
Yep. Yeah.
And I wouldn't know why. And then like that was the game. Like you couldn't control it.
I was actually playing that less than a month ago, ripping soundtracks off of it for IGN.
It was fun.
I know, it was great, ripping sound files off it.
There's a bunch of the 3D Sonic games. I was like, this is gonna be the one.
What about just every Sonic game?
Yeah, I mean, okay, I'll say it. Yeah, you're right. I've never really liked any of the Sonic games. Yeah. I've tried and tried and tried. It just doesn't work for me.
Two's pretty good. CD's pretty good.
Sonic CD's pretty good.
But in that BioWare one ain't bad.
Any of the Monkey Ball games other than 1 and 2?
I was going to say, you're on...
No, Justin, I'm with you. Monkey Ball 1 and 2 are two of my favorite games of all time. Yeah. But then they ported them to...
One's bad.
Yeah, they were on Wii.
If you have a jump button,
iPhone,
you're in real trouble.
Yeah, why? Why is there a jump button in Monkey Ball?
Because Sega's full of idiots.
Speaking of franchises that are dead, like, what the hell? Bring that back.
For me, pretty much most of the 8-bit and 16-bit games, like Back to the Future Part 2 and 3 on NES was bad. But like, because I'm just a dumb kid, like I don't know any better. But the one that like really stands out to me that I tried to convince myself was good was like Sewer Shark on the Sega CD. Because my family spent all this money on a Sega CD. I was a little spoiled. I got a lot, like all the video game stuff I asked for. And I just wanted to convince myself so bad that console was worth the money and like worth, the time. And I'm like, look at this game and look at this guy's face. And like, man, that game is bad.
Yep.
Three come to mind for me. Ultima 3 for the NES, which I bought. That's the first NES Ultima. Ultima 3 is a great video game, a true classic, except on NES, where they broke the game. It's just awful. It's awful in so many ways. Second is Golgo 13, which is
That game sucks.
A terrible game that I love. I love Top Secret Episode. I think it's awful. The A and B buttons are switched. It's all these different modes. It's a shooter. It's sniper mode, shooter, side scroller. You have sex in it. You know, there's all kinds of crazy things that happen, but somehow, despite the fact that all the levels seem like they're like duct taped together and the game's always about to break, it's so thematically awesome that, I mean, at the end of that game, you fight like an army of Hitler clones and blow up Hitler's brain, and it's
just like Bionic Commando.
Yeah, a lot like Bionic Commando, but a bad game. And I had it as a kid and loved it, even though it was awful. I knew it was awful then. A third one that I played for a long time for work and absolutely hated was Knack. I played 60 hours of Knack for guide writing.
Goodness
and
gracious.
Knack is fun for a couple hours, and then it's just never fun again. Yeah. And wow, that was...
Yeah. I actually couldn't finish that game. It just stopped working.
It just broke?
It just broke.
Weird. Okay, that's odd.
Very bad. The weird thing about growing up playing bad games before we really knew what bad games were is that we never really had an idea that we were playing a bad game while we were playing a bad game.
No, I was an idiot. Like, I definitely spent my memory. I don't know if this is actually true, like, mathematically, but my memory is that I played Back to the Future 2 and 3 way more than, like, Mario 3. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why. The game's, like, awful, but, like, that's my enduring memory of the NES. It's, like, that and, like, Road Rash.
Like nowadays, if you're playing a game and you're like, is this bad? You can turn on your computer and walk over or just reach your phone and be like, oh yeah, this is bad. Mm-hmm. Thousands of people agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
But back then you had no idea.
But then you also had those games that were good that your friends told you were bad. I had a friend that let me borrow River City Ransom and Bionic Commando forever because he thought they were awful. And that dude was just wrong.
Yeah. That guy's an idiot.
Actually, he's a really smart dude. He just wasn't then. Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry I called you an idiot, Ryan.
So Shadowgate is one of my all-time favorite NES games. Mm. And then 10 years later, I learned that a new Shadowgate is coming to Nintendo 64. Shadowgate 64. Nice. And I was so excited, and I got it. And that game is awful, awful, awful. It's so bad. But it was like a Star Wars prequel scenario where I'm like playing it. I'm like, yeah, this is cool. It's like playing more Shadowgate. I'm like wandering around the castle in 3D.
Yep.
Have any of you been unfortunate enough to play this game?
No.
I know its reputation.
Did you play the original?
Yes.
The original is like, it's got all these really clever puzzles. You're always encountering cool monsters and stuff. And the Shadowgate 64 is just totally empty, almost void of any character or any puzzle. You're just wandering around an empty castle and nothing is ever happening.
Wow. So people are going to love 3D.
Yeah.
Big open spaces.
I played through the whole game because I thought I was a... I thought I had to because I was such a Shadowgate super fan.
Man, the music in that original Shadowgate on NES is
really, really good. Yeah. Great soundtrack. Before we get to Video Game 20 questions this week, let's share what we're playing at the moment.
Well, goodness gracious, guys.
I know. I knew you were going to give us an update on...
I am excited to give you an update on my Stardew Valley farm. Yeah. I believe last time I had finally gotten my chicken coop, or was just about to. Chicken coop is paying off in dividends. I'm getting multiple eggs every day and turning them into mayonnaise now, which is very profitable.
Whoa, what?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you have these like crafting stations. You can turn the eggs into mayonnaise. But now, the big development is I finally saved up enough money and resources to get a barn and some cows. So I have cows, and they're giving me milk, which I can give to the honeys to up my relationship level with them.
The honeys?
The women.
Oh, or is that men. What they call them? Because that's what rappers called women in the 90s.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, the women around the town. I feel like I'm playing as a woman in the game, and I'd be down to marry a man, except for all the male marriage options are really boring and generic. It's just a bunch of, like, just generic dudes, and all the women are, like, really interesting. So I think she's going to end up having a relationship with one of them instead. But I'm also turning it into cheese, which is very profitable.
The women? Mm.
Yeah.
The women into cheese?
Yeah.
The milk into cheese.
Okay. It's because this game took a strange turn.
Yeah, and now I'm getting deeper and deeper in the mine, so I'm starting to get more rare metals that'll help me upgrade more things on my farm. Oh, guys.
Stardew Valley.
It's a good time to be alive.
I'm in deep.
Yeah. Is there an end game?
At the end of 3 years on the farm, you get kind of a rating, and it's like, hey, how well you did. But then there's no, you can keep going and max out your relationship with everybody and just keep going and fishing and having fun.
Nice.
How about you, Jared?
Strong game of the year candidate.
Playing a game for review that I can't talk about yet. Playing a game for a guide that I can't talk about yet. And please let it never be so.
Yep.
Playing Twilight Princess at home for fun, and really enjoying going back to that.
Still your favorite Zelda game?
Yeah, at this point, I want to finish it up and see if I still feel that way. But I just got pulled right back in. Those dungeons just so perfect and wonderful and wonderful and perfect.
I have nothing mean to say about you liking Twilight Princess so much.
Yay!
Yeah. That's interesting. It's your favorite Zelda game.
Yeah, it is.
Interesting.
You don't hear that often.
Or ever.
Yeah. No, there's a lot in there that's like my favorite that Zelda's ever done.
Great dungeons, rest of it.
I think people, I feel like that tutorial is so egregious and frustrating because you know you really don't start the game until you're about 2.5-3 hours into it, and that first 3 hours is a slog, and then it's 47 hours of perfect design and utter bliss.
So yep.
I really wish they'd have cut the first 3 hours out of the game for the HD remake. I think it would have been...
Yeah, I was bummed that, you know, there wasn't more attention to all that stuff there, because I don't think we'll ever see this game get re-released again.
Yeah.
Maybe we won't for another 15 years.
But make it through, because the rest of it's so worth it. The dungeons are great. I love the overworld in that game. I feel like the overworld's absolutely wonderfully designed.
Brian, what are you playing?
I just wrapped up Far Cry Primal. I put about 30 hours in that game. I almost platinum it, which is weird because I haven't done that in a while.
Did you finish it or are you just kind of done with it?
I finished it. I finished the game and did all the side stuff. And I have like, it was, did you ever do like, I don't know if you guys ever, if you still go for trophies or achievements or anything anymore. Yeah. I usually don't anymore because I play so many different things. But I was going through a trophy list and I was like, oh, I've gotten all of these except for like two or three in just natural play. So I might as well just go off and finish it. So I jumped from that to The Division, which are two very different Ubisoft games, but equally sort of fascinating and fun in very different ways. Far Cry was a lot more fun than I thought it would be, considering it's in a lot of ways a very pared down version of the stuff they'd done before.
So if you beat it, don't you think it's weird that they send your caveman back to modern times at the end?
Yeah, that you wake up at the Animus at the end.
Man,
it sucks. There's that cinematic universe. There's the Flintstones car is buried in a lake in that game. That's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. But no, I was really surprised
I'm probably like 15 hours into it, and I haven't decided how much I like it.
Right.
I'm enjoying it enough to keep playing.
When we get together in November and December and we talk about Game of the Year stuff, this won't be there. Mm-hmm. You know, it won't be on my list. But I'm so glad I played it. Like, I think it's like...
It's a riskier game than I think people kind of think or that it's getting credit for.
And it feels like... there's nothing else that feels like that game out there.
No, it's really fun and it's really pretty and it's pretty savage. And I think it's just like... I don't know. I think people need to play more 7s and 8s.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You know, like I know budgets are limited, but like with Redbox and stuff now, you can rent games. Like, go drop $5 and play a game like this for a couple of days and bring it back. Like,
steal it.
Yeah, steal it. Borrow it from your friend. wait for a Steam sale. Whatever it is. Like, there's so many ways to play games nowadays that like don't. If you just limit yourself to just the 9s and 10s, like you're missing out on a lot. So
yeah, I'm still working my way through Far Cry Primal. I have The Division, which I want to start playing, but. The game of the moment that I cannot stop playing, that I'm totally obsessed with, is Broforce.
Oh!
Yeah.
Which is one of this month's free PlayStation Plus games. So if you have a PS4, you have no excuse not to download, well, if you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber, no excuse not to download this game. It's amazing. It's so, so good. It's been out for PC for a while, but now it's on PS4, so I'm finally playing it. So everyone, how familiar are you with it?
I've been playing it.
You already played it.
Yeah. It's my only issue with it was, I think, I might have to wait for a patch or something like that because I'm noticing some slowdown stuff.
The farther I get into it, the longer the longer levels take to load.
Yeah.
Upwards to like 30 seconds to a minute.
And there were certain characters too that brought the like frame rate to a crawl for me. And it's weird because I'm never like really picky about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it comes to like my 2D action platformy shoot 'em ups and shit like that.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that has to just run perfectly for me.
No, I get that. Yeah. I think they'll patch it. But yeah. No, it's my favorite game I've played since Metal Gear Solid 5.
Mm. Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I gotta put more time into it.
It's so good. So it's like, it's, you know, a 2D action platformer, but it's not all run and gun. There's like stealth elements to it. There's environmental destruction. So like as you're blowing stuff up, you're changing the path that you can take through the level, or maybe a boulder. You're like setting a boulder loose that can fall on your head, kill you, kill enemies. And I love the conceit that you start each level with just one life, and you earn more lives by rescuing POWs, but every time you rescue a POW, it randomly switches you out with one of your 80s action heroes. It could be Bronan the Brobarian, it could be RoboCop, it could be Rambro, but each one has a different weapon, a different means of making your way through the level, and it's randomized, so it's like, it's always switching up how you have to play the game.
It kind of reminds me of Magic Sword in a really weird way. If like Magic Sword and Metal Slug had a baby, it would be Broforce.
Interesting.
Oh, I'm playing a lot of Metal Slug Attack on the App Store.
Yeah.
Oh!
Metal Slug Tower Defense?
It's sort of Tower Defense. I don't know how you describe it. Like, sort of base defense. They're sending out units at you, and you send out units at them, and then they mash together and fight. So sort of a strategy, tactics, cooldown management.
This is on
mobile,
iPhone?
Yeah.
You recommend it?
Nice.
I do. It's got some free-to-play shenanigans, but you don't need to worry too much about that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fun. Cool.
All right, now is the time on GameScoop when we play Video Game 20 Questions. This is when you, the viewers and listeners, send me a suggestion and my panelists have 20 yes or no questions with which to guess this mystery game. This week it comes from Richard Jones Jr.
RJJ, as they say.
RJJ. Wow. Nice job, Sean, pulling that up.
Is it Bioshock?
Shall we begin? All right. Would you like to play a game?
Yeah. Does your character wear a hat?
Wow, things have gotten weird in 20 questions.
Yeah, you haven't been here in a little while.
It is totally unclear who or what your character is.
Okay, there we go.
Your character is abstract.
Was this game released after January 1st, 2000?
No.
All right. Try to narrow the decade down, maybe? Or
was this a console game?
Yes.
Is this a game where you manipulate blocks of some kind?
No.
Was this game released after January 1st, 1990?
No.
It's old. Okay.
Five questions.
Is this a puzzle game?
Yes.
Okay. But no manipulating blocks.
All right, a pre-1990 puzzle game where it's unclear what you are and you're not manipulating blocks.
No, but it's not. That means it's not like Tetris. I was thinking Tetris.
Yeah, I was thinking Tetris too for some reason. Okay. I mean, also Tetris, also not Tetris.
That is an example of where you are abstract.
Yeah.
There's a lot of puzzle games.
But now I'm really thrown off by it being a puzzle game where you don't manipulate blocks.
It's a console game prior to 1990.
Kicks.
It could be Kicks, absolutely.
Is that with the Q?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Kicks was released on consoles and arcade.
How do we narrow it? Okay, is the game played on a single screen? Or wait, does the game scroll?
Yes.
The game scrolls, so it's not Kicks, because Kicks doesn't scroll.
And any of those other single screen, top down, puzzly things?
Okay, so it doesn't.
Like,
it's a console game. Released on the NES?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. I was just going to ask that.
And an NES puzzle game that scrolls?
A scrolling NES puzzle game, yep. We could talk about publisher, we could talk about.
Yeah.
Or developer, we could ask about.
Was this published by Nintendo?
Yes.
Oh, okay, we'll figure this out.
Yoshi's Cookie?
Yoshi's Cookie, yeah, Yoshi's Cookie, Wario's Woods.
I was going to say Wario's Woods.
But those were both released after 1990, I think.
Oh, yeah, they were late NES.
Yeah.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
I believe. Alleyway?
It could be Yoshi.
I don't know
Yoshi might have been
like
91.
Arkanoid.
No, it's 91, I think. Oh, which one? What'd you say?
I said Alleyway or Arkanoid, but I don't know if those
Alleyway's on the Game Boy. And this is NES. Alleyway never came to the NES.
Okay, didn't they have some sort of breakout game?
In the NES? Well, there was Arkanoid.
Did this game star or feature a Nintendo mascot?
No.
Okay, so it's a Nintendo...
10 questions.
Because Mario was actually in the ship in Alleyway, and he wears a hat.
But again, that's on Game Boy.
Okay.
So you know,
still.
It's an NES platformer
that
scrolls...
Platformer? Puzzle game.
No, sorry, an NES puzzle game that scrolls... Where you are abstract.
It's made by Nintendo.
Made by Nintendo.
Goodness.
Hold on. Now I just got to think through these. This seems like it should be super obvious.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, it probably is super obvious. We're just not thinking clearly.
Yeah.
It's in obvious what you are. It's not built around a franchise character.
Can I ask one?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Was this part of the Black Box series?
Like, is that just... What is the Black Box series?
There's like 20 games or something.
It's like the earliest?
The launch titles, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's one of the Black Box games. Let's see, okay, now we can just make this. There's sports games, there's Wrecking Crew, there's Kung Fu, there's Super Mario Brothers, there's Ice Climber, Gyromite, Stack Up. Wait a minute, Stack Up? Could it be Stack Up? Do you play this game with the assistance of a robotic buddy?
Yes.
There we go.
But is it, because there was more than one.
It could be Gyromite or Stack Up. But Gyromite, you see the professor, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you stack things up in this game?
No.
Do you Gyromite things in this game?
Yes. You are not the professor in Gyromite.
Oh, that's right. You're just helping the professor.
You are
that's
helping
right.
the professor
that's right.
get through the levels.
That's correct. Is you don't actually control him directly.
It is Gyromite.
It is Gyromite.
Okay, there it is.
Yes!
Yay! Nice question with the black box.
Yeah.
1985 puzzle game. It is. It has both single and multiplayer modes, in case you're going to ask that. But yeah, that game scrolls, and you're just someone that's helping the professor.
That's
the
right.
scrolling did completely trip me up. I would have never got to Gyromite.
Really?
I mean, I just don't picture it as being that kind of game.
That great soundtrack, that little great loop of music that runs over Gyromite.
Yeah,
I think it's Hip Tanaka, right?
Probably.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I had that game, and you didn't need to use Rob the Robot to play it. You could just use a controller.
Rob didn't do anything.
Yeah. Rob was a Trojan horse to get your parents to buy video games.
So
to get toy stores to buy video games.
I never owned a Rob the Robot. I just didn't, I had an NES without one. And so I always saw these pictures of Rob the Robot. I'm like, oh, he's this dope robot Nintendo made. But then I actually saw one here at IGN for the very first time in my life. Sam hooked him up one day. I'm like, this thing sucks, and I know it has a reputation.
Slow and loud,
yeah. It's loud.
It's really loud.
And that's the thing with any time you see an infomercial for any weird product, where look at this, a Roomba is loud as hell.
Yeah.
Like anything that you can't hear the noise that it's making, it's probably loud as hell.
Well, I'm sure all of us here know this, but for the viewers that weren't there for it, I mean, there was a time where video games were considered so dead by American toy stores and marketers that nobody that had money on the business end would touch them. And Rob was a Trojan horse. It's like, it's not a video game, it's an entertainment system. See, there's a robot. Just to get toy stores to buy this so that they could then sell it to you. That's how like toxic video games were to investors.
Yeah, that's why it was called Family Computer in Japan. And in America, they're like, we're not touching that.
Right, yeah. In Japan, they didn't have the same problem. They were booming at that point.
Well, they changed the design of it to look more like a VCR, some consumer electronics as well. Maybe not VCR at that time, but
It was a VCR. That was exactly what it was molded after.
I think when we set up the NES, we used Rob the Robot once, and then it got shoved in a drawer, and it's probably still in there to this day.
Apparently those stack up and Jeremite pieces are worth a lot of money.
Really?
Yeah, if you have like a complete set of like Rob pieces and box and stuff to go with those games, because people lost the little plastic pieces.
Yep.
If you have them all, they're fairly
for little plastic discs?
Yeah.
Can you just 3D print them at this point?
Well, you can now, but you couldn't.
Most people are idiots.
Yeah, I like how you paused there.
It's history. It's living
history. I know you were going on that one.
Living history.
All right, next week is the Game Developers Conference,
woohoo!
GDC, here in San Francisco. That's an industry-facing show where there is usually some news coming out of that, usually like tech-related or hardware news. Perhaps most importantly, Sony is having a PlayStation VR event next week. We're just a few weeks away from the release of Oculus Rift. We know the price of that and the HTC Vive. I think it might be time for us to finally learn the price and release date of PlayStation VR. So stay tuned for that news coming next week.
VR scoop.
Yeah, VR scoop. But that is all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Brian. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.